Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Hello, this is Fred Film Radio. You're listening to the daily program Global Critics Venice Voice from the Venice Film Festival. And I'm Rita Di Santo, I'm film critic and I am the host of the program. And today with me, I have a splendid colleagues. Kevin Maher, Chief Critics of the Times. Welcome.
Thanks, Rita. I am very splendid. I'm very happy to be here.
I have to say that Kevin has been here, has been coming to Venice for how many years?
I think this is my eighth year.
Eighth years. That is your favorite festival, isn't it?
Obviously. Yes, of course it is. It's got the sea, it's got Venice, it's got everything, not just the films. That seems quite sacrilegious to say that, but it's with Cannes, it's just the films. With Berlin, it's horrible and cold, and you just don't want to be there. But with Venice, I think you're steeped in something else. It's not just the cinema, but the cinema is complemented by everything around it. But you know, best city in the world, Venice.
And it's 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. In the afternoon, and we are having a spritz. You can't see, but cheers.
Cheers.
Aperol spritz, because I know that here Aperol spritz is very important. Okay, so today is day two of the festival, and we have three wonderful movies that they will win something. The first one is Ferrari. The second is Dogman by Luc Besson, and then we have Bastard and the Promised Land by Danish director Nikolaj Arcel. I said wonderful movie, but I'm not sure. So Ferrari, let's start with the first one. Ferrari is a biopic of Enzo Ferrari, the Italian race car driver, engineer and founder of the Scuderia Ferrari. His goal was to build the fast racing cars. He was born in 1898. His motto was, "We cannot describe passion, we can only live it." And it's a passionate biopic.
Wow. if only the film had been as passionate as that statement. I struggled with this film. I just felt it was... It wasn't one thing. I just thought, was it about... You know, this is, you only sort of halfway through you discover that the whole film is leading up to this race. The Mille... I don't know how to pronounce it. How do you pronounce it? The Mille Miglia or something? This famous race in 1957 where a lot of people were killed. And it feels like that's the point of the race, because Enzo has to win the race for his company not to go under. His wife Penelope Cruz is amazing. It's his wife, actually, Laura. She's brilliant. She's the best thing in the film. But you know, she has taken half a million quid away from him. And if he wins the race, there's so many things that'll happen if he wins this race, if the Ferrari team wins this race. And that sort of details kind of dropped in at the end. I just felt it was, the race happens, there's a horrible carnage, and then that's kind of left behind. It's really hard to describe, but when you're watching the film, it feels like just a series of things happening without a great, to use a pun, driving force behind it. It's just, and you cling. I clinged to Penelope Cruz every time she was on screen. I was like, oh, thank God, somebody who I care about, somebody who's interesting. Adam Driver, he's fine, but he's a bit, you know, he's a really interesting actor, but I'm not sure if he brought anything to it other than. And I also struggle with the accent thing, you know, when American actors are doing the sort of hey, the whole sort of thing. And I just sometimes feel it was a bit like, it was the same with House of Gucci. I struggled with House of Gucci as well.
Yeah, Adam Driver at the beginning, I struggled as well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Enzo Ferrari was a man from the north of Italy, so it's a certain character. And to see Adam Driver with this grey hair, at the beginning, I think... It takes a while for the movie to really start, and especially because you don't see the race at the beginning. Yeah. You have so much of his private life, and I have to say that for me, Penelope Cruz is the one that's really, really is the passionate side of the movie. Is the one, the character that moves a bit the story.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she's amazing in it. You know, I spoke to one of your friends, was it Paola, who was saying, was telling me about Enzo. I knew nothing about Enzo Ferrari, but she was in this tiny detail, which is that he's a small, he was a small man who had a Napoleon complex, and he was, a lot of what motivated him was to show everyone else that, you know, he would be treated with respect. And Adam Driver is a huge man who's tall and lanky, and I loved, you know, the idea. I thought, you know, that they really missed a trick here by casting a little sort of a Tom Cruise type or something that, instead, what the film does is to, you know, to give him motivations. They do this thing that so many, and it's a real Hollywood thing, is they give him a dead child. I know he had a dead child in real life. I think the kid is, Alfredo was 24 when he died. But this has become the laziest sort of trope in movies, where you have a character, maybe a historical figure, and you think, how do we make them empathetic? I know, let's give them a dead child. They did it with Neil Armstrong in First Man. Ryan Gosling as Neil Armstrong. They totally overplayed the death of his child, and it just, it happens so many times in movies that it's become a trigger of just inept screenwriting. When you have a character, it's a shortcut. What do we do? What do we do? Dead child. And I felt, I wouldn't mind if the dead child, I like the fact that him and Penelope Cruz went to the crypt sort of separately. That was a nice detail. I like the fact that he was talking to him. And actually the scene where he's talking in the crypt is the most human he is as a character, where he's soft and you don't mind him doing the silly accent. But they overplayed it. That's the only characteristic he had, was I'm a grieving parent. He starts the film a grieving parent, in terms of a character arc, starts the film a grieving parent, goes to the race a grieving parent, the race and the tragedy happens, and he ends the film a slightly less grieving parent, but still a grieving parent, who's taking his son to the crypt. And that's a terrible character arc. It's just like this. It's flat, it's boring, it's uninteresting, and Adam Driver isn't a good enough actor to elevate that into anything. It's just whoop, whereas Penelope Cruz is all over the place. You're just fascinated by her when she's on screen. So I think it's a difficult film.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the second title, Dogman, Luc Besson. This French director is the story of a man that with a very complex childhood, and he'd been rescued by dogs. Yeah. You love dogs, and you know a lot about dogs. Do you have your dog that brings you sugar in the morning?
Yeah.
I wish my...
My dog who brings a mobile phone to the table, all that, yeah. God, you know, I have to say as well, I've already seen a couple of films that I've loved in the festival, so this makes me sound like such a negative ninny, but I hated this film. I thought it was so bad. It was just totally pointless, so stupid. And not, yes, I'm a dog person, so there was loads of things that annoyed me about it. I was like, why aren't they being walked? Where is all the poo? Where is all the pee? You know, and in there's so many scenes that I know in the place, the main character moves into this sort of derelict place in New Jersey, I think it is, and it's got multiple stories, so you could, in theory, they could go to a different floor to pee and poo and all that stuff, but there's other scenes where he's surrounded by hundreds of dogs, and I'm just thinking, no, they'd all be peeing and pooing, so that really annoyed me. As a dog person, that annoyed me, but it was just a mess. It was a total mess. I don't think Luc Besson knew what he was doing. I think he thought, oh, cool idea, a boy raised by dogs, brilliant, let's bring it on. And then he just ran into so many issues, like, oh no, it's a guy who's maybe a bit trans but not fully trans, and he just likes dressing up, but he's hetero because he likes this woman. And there's so many things where he was cowardly, who just didn't know what to do. It was like, I'll have a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of this. And then there's a gangster, stupid sort of drug dealing gangster who's really dangerous and kills everyone. I feel like Luc Besson, he's obviously super successful, and I liked his sort of early stuff, but I feel like he just lives in a comic book world. All his movies are like, that's his soup, but that's what he draws on. He's this comic book menu where it's so far removed from reality that he's now got to a place where he thinks, oh, I'll do a movie about a guy whose dogs can carry mobile phones into drug dealers' dens, and he can say things to them like he's making a recipe. Yeah? He can say, "Can you get me the plain flour, not the self-raising flour?" And the dog runs over and gets the right flour and all that stuff. So it's just, I think even in the most silly, you know, comic book, you know, superhero movie, you need something to cling to as an audience member, something that says, "Oh yeah, we share a common humanity." And this is a film made by someone who's just on planet bonkers.
Yeah, I feel that, I mean, if the dogs play an interesting part of the movie, and But inside this, going back to that story in this very strange environment, and with this lovely, nice lady that asked him like a mother almost, I really felt also it was too much. I mean, it was a cruel man. He was, it's a cruel character. He's not a cruel character. It's very strange. Somebody said, they feel the movie is moving. I didn't, wow. Honestly. I don't think it's a movie that where you can feel something for the main, for the character,
yeah.
No?
Yeah. I couldn't feel anything for the character because I just didn't feel he existed, even his childhood. You know, that American, deep south, super Christian environment, just, it felt so fake. It felt like something from a comic book where the older brother has a sort of the Peaky Blinders haircut, and the father, which is a non-character, you know, the father was so, his character notes must have been, you're super violent, and that's all he was. And so he was just there to push him into the dog cage the whole time. So, I thought it was just pretty hopeless.
Okay, let's finish with the third one. Bastarden is the Danish title, and the English title is The Promised Land by Nikolaj Arcel. And this is a Danish director. And honestly, I found the movie pretty boring.
Okay.
I like Danish cinema because they break the rules and they're doing something interesting. But this one, I don't know. What do you think?
You know what? I saw it last night, and it was 10 o'clock, and I was working on sort of 4 hours sleep from the night before, so I was really, really tired. I saw it at 10 o'clock, and it kept me awake for the whole thing, which is always a really good sign. And, you know, I get that it's, and all the way through, I kept thinking at the end, it can only go one of two ways. It can only go happy ever after or incredibly bleak. It didn't go incredibly bleak, but I really admired it the whole way through. After a day of terrible films, to watch a film that was just so competently done, like the storytelling was so perfect and just like a machine. It was a click, click, click. It was like watching a very well-constructed machine. I think there's a moment in it, you know, just when the character of it's Mads Mikkelsen, and he's taking his tenants, this couple who've run away from a bad landlord, and the male part of the couple dies, and he takes the woman on as housekeeper, and then they eventually develop a sort of relationship, it becomes a fully fledged relationship. But there's a moment in it, and I'm racking my brain now, where she's at her most happy, I think, and it's straight after that moment where everything goes wrong. And I love that. When you're watching a film and you just know that the people writing it and the people making it have an innate understanding of storytelling. And I thought it worked well. I love Mads Mikkelsen.
I love Mads Mikkelsen too, but in the movie he's a really talented actor. And I really didn't feel... I felt this incredible, strong inner spirit, but I don't understand this static character from the beginning to the end of the movie. I mean, there are some very cruel moments, like, for example, when this farmer has the hot water.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? He's less of a character, and he's more of a sort of he's a vehicle for the film's message. And the film's message at the end is that you can't have it all, and that beware of riches and aspirations towards class, towards snobbery and being one of the barons. Whereas in fact, you have to follow your heart and go with the woman you love and the perfect little family that he ends up with. But I didn't mind that. It's quite it's not like pantomime. The guy who pours the villain, the landowner, what was it, whatever his surname is, Frederick, he's so over the top. He's just evil. Again, a bit like the father in Dogman. His character notes are just, you're evil. But I didn't mind it in this film, because I just thought, okay, Maybe that's what I needed at 10 o'clock at night when you're really tired. It was like being told a bedtime story. It was just very... There was nothing unexpected in it, but done nicely.
So anyway, thank you very much for coming today. And I hope to see you next few days. And I'm sure that we will find titles that we really, really like.
Passionately love.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Gavin.
Thank you, Rita.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.